Hey, Greg. Anybody else?
This is Aaron.
Good morning, Aaron. Can you hear everybody
morning,
okay?
Andy.
Can you hear everybody okay?
I can hear everybody. Yep, fine. Cool.
Anybody else? No. All right. Did you get all the names of everybody here in the room, Aaron?
I missed the second person.
Maybe Chad Helms?
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Sorry, my voice is a little hoarse today.
You gotta quit smoking a cigar.
I know.
Yeah. So, a couple of action items from last month. The hoist breakers at Minto and Foster, we need some way to access those breakers. Real quick, Greg, since we have you on the line, I know last month we talked and the truck that the Detroit maintenance crew put down there so you could access those things in a little man basket. Is that still at Minto or did they take it back?
It was here till Thursday or Friday of last week.
Okay.
They took it up, but it sounds like they wanted to bring it back.
Cool. Yeah, unfortunately, that's probably our best resolution right now. So I talked a little bit with the maintenance crew up there, and they don't really have the capacity to design or build or install some kind of walkway right now. They can probably assist, but they felt like it's not really something that they have the ability to do right now. So when that happens, what we usually do is utilize a smaller group of engineers up in the Portland district. We call the small projects team, and they usually handle stuff like this where they can contract out kind of smaller scopes of work, but they require money to do anything. We don't have very much money right now, so we can't really fund their labor. We can give them an idea of what we want and they can do a little bit of scoping, but we might have to wait until the end of the year when we get more funding, because right now we can't even fund all the routine programs we have, much less labor for anybody else. So we need to follow up with Tammy. Sometimes at the very end of the year, there's a couple of surplus funds here and there. We can maybe scrape something together, but right now, without any money to fund anybody to look at this or to move forward with any kind of outside contract work, that boom truck is probably our best bet. So I'll circle back with those guys and see if they have the ability to move that boom truck back down there, Greg.
Yeah, that would give us a little security, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, good or bad, it doesn't look like a huge fish run year, so we'll see how much we're going to use those hoppers.
Yeah. It'd at least be nice to have it down there, especially when you start seeing fish and start moving them around.
Yep.
So that's the update on that one. Any questions on that? Probably not what you want to hear, Ryan. But
yeah,
no,
I get it.
Yeah. And as far as biosecurity for Marion Forks, I was going to check on the availability of adding that to the funding list for FY19. I've spoken a little bit with Tammy about that, and we can put it on the list. But there are other things that are probably going to come in a higher priority to that, namely the broodstock holding pond at Willamette. In my mind, that one is a little more important to address than the biosecurity in Marion Forks. It's probably easier to address because it's a little bit lower cost. But there's other things like that when we add on these additional pieces of work and additional funding requests, they've got to get ranked. So, and we often come back to hatchery managers and to folks like Ryan to kind of help us prioritize. You know, there's a list of maintenance and kind of outstanding items to do at a lot of these hatcheries. So the Willamette holding pond's been on the list for a long while, and it's been ranked pretty high in the past. I know Lance has a lot of interest in getting that thing rebuilt, and that'll help alleviate a lot of the pre-spawn mortality within hatchery that we see there, hopefully. So it's on the list, but I can't necessarily guarantee that it'll get funded in FY19. But we can get it included in there. And the longer you, so usually the longer the things remain on that list, they kind of move up in priority over time.
Okay.
So that's kind of where that one sits for now. I think I'll probably just leave it there until something else happens. And then the Foster Ladder Attraction. So this got discussed at Willamette FPOM last month. So NIMS was going to give us some ideas about... Ed Meyer had some ideas with lighting changes, and whatever else, some small low-cost items. That list wasn't sent to folks as far as I know. I know Lance said he was going to follow up with Ed during the last meeting.
Yeah, Andy, this is Lance, and I still need to do that.
Okay.
So, I was going to kind of look at kind of the latest information on Caudill's work and what's been done around that ladder, and I'll follow up with Ed.
Okay. Yeah, and I was going to say, based on some of the discussion at the last Willamette FPOM, I don't even know if it's really that important anymore. I know folks had some hesitancy about adding lights, changing lights. If we know there's kind of a bigger issue there with water temperature, maybe we should just go after that. But if Ed still feels strongly about some of his ideas, or you know, wants to pass those along, we welcome it for sure.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, so that's all I had for action items. Does anybody...
Andy, do you want to keep that on the list as an action item, or do you want this to be removed and maybe just follow up on email, because it's been on there since November?
I know. Yeah, it's our longest standing one. Or actually, October ones. We can take it off. And Lance, maybe you can just follow up with an email.
Sure, that sounds good.
And Aaron, I think we can also take off biosecurity at Marion Forks. It's been added to the list for FY19, so until we get to that point, we actually get funding to move forward on it, either in whole or in part. I think we can stop talking about that every month.
Okay.
Thanks.
And the loose breakers.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing there. There's not a whole lot we can do about that one. Although I still need to follow up with the Detroit crew and make sure they can make that boom truck available. All right. Does anybody have anything else they wanted to add to the agenda before we jump into updates? Cool. All right. Marion Forks and Minto, Mr. Grimbimber, take it away.
All right. Everything's going well. We were starting to swap over the snow equipment and to lawn equipment, but of course got snow yesterday. But all the fish are outside. Everything's ponded on schedule. They plan to bring the Marken trailer in around the 26th of June, so we're looking really, really good up there.
Hold on, Greg. I can hardly hear you. Could you speak up?
Okay. But you want me to repeat all that, or are we good?
I couldn't hear any of it, so yes, please, if you would.
Did everybody hear it but Cam?
I heard you, but I'm sitting right next to the phone, Greg.
Okay, let me see if I can, let me see if I've got it.
I turned up.
All right, is that any better?
Yeah.
Okay, Marion Forks going well. Everything's spawned outside. Got a little snow the other day. Marking scheduled to start on the 26th of June. We've got all the fish we need, and sizes are catching up. We're a little slow just because of the cold winter, but everything's going well there. Minto collections are slow. We've seen 31 winter steelhead. We haven't seen a new winter steelhead since May 5th. We did see our first two summer steelhead last Friday. I think there was only five over Bennett, so we've seen two of them. Other than that, we're just cleaning up after releasing all the summer steelhead smolts and getting ready for collection.
Greg, I'm trying to summarize some of the steelhead data from past years, and I'm wondering whether you may have already done that. We're looking at a steelhead, winter steelhead total over Bennett's now at 142, but the catch by now at Minto is still really low, 31 fish for the last report. Is that normal? I really haven't dove into the steelhead numbers game as much as I have with Chinook.
Yeah, we should have seen the vast majority by now. The one odd thing this year is the first one we saw back in March, the first female that came in was actually ripe, which seemed pretty early to me. And I think we only had two of the, the anomaly is out of the 31, 22 of them have been males. And only 9 females, and only 2 of those females were not ripe when they came in. So I don't know if it was colder, higher flows. I don't know what it was, but it just seemed like they were ripe early. And like I said, it's skewed males towards females. Probably the worst I've ever seen it.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you is last Thursday, I got all of the age data for 2016 from all the spawning ground surveys and hatchery sampling. And there's something curious happening that where you got an unusual, very unusual large number of 5-year-olds, or alternatively, small number of 4-year-olds last year and in 2015. Those are the broods that came off of the year when you were building Minto. So they were not. And so what I'm asking is, do you remember whether there was additional rearing of those fish elsewhere, or were they all simply reared at Marion Forks on cold water and then direct released? That's the 2011 and 2012 broods. The reason I'm asking
is we captured those that with a trap at Bennett, transferred the adults to McKenzie, spawned them at McKenzie, and then brought the eggs back to Marion Forks. So they had normal rearing. Just spawned at McKenzie.
Okay, but so there was no acclimation though, because.
Correct.
So that was direct releases of cold water reared fish. I'm looking to see if there's some possible explanation for kind of an unusual shift in age structure and size. Good ones, big fish, big old fish. Your fish were big and old. The biggest. And the oldest.
You're not supposed to tell Gray that.
The biggest and the oldest in the basin, by the way.
You've been just telling me what I've known for 25 years.
Thanks, Cam.
Sure. Is that Brett on the phone? No.
So where were those fish released while Minto is being rebuilt?
Give me just a second. I know in. I know my phone's going to go bad. Let me get the release. Locations and timing.
You just put them in straight at Pack Saddler?
Probably, yeah. I messed it.
It seemed like it was a split between.
So 2013, everything went out between around 13 to the pound, and they would have gone out on 318, 319 from Pack Saddle.
Okay. Mm. So a direct release of quite small fish.
Yeah, because normally you're doing 10 to the pound, Greg?
We try to get to 12. The only time we've ever got bigger was the first few years we had Minto, just because we acclimated them here longer and got them to about 10 and a half. But generally, coming from Marion Forks, they're between 12 and 14.
Okay.
And the 2012 release also was all Pack Saddle. They're about 11.2 to 11.9 to the pound. But yeah, 12 and 13 were both from Pack Saddle.
Okay, thanks.
Your 12 release had all those coated wire tags from the Wild by Wild, by Hatchery by Wild, by.
And there were no differences. They all came back basically the same, which actually made a lot of sense given that 36% of those wild fish were actually hatchery fish. So, okay. It doesn't hold together as an explanation, really. They're not that much smaller. They don't get that much bigger during acclimation or rearing at Minto.
Yeah.
So, an anomaly. It'd be interesting though. The biggest, oldest fish, that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. All right, Greg, anything else?
No, I think we're going good. I did been kind of pushing to get that TDG meter in. I had both a Detroit electrician and maintenance crew person look at it this week, so they're gonna try to push Mr. Eichmann to try to get it in before they do the outage in June.
Mm. Nice. Okay. Did it sound like they needed support from the Portland engineers?
Oh, they were just looking. It looked like they found an empty breaker for power. They are pretty sure they can get it to the PLC if they had to. And I just told them if they needed some conduit or parts or pieces, just let me know.
Cool. All right.
So it didn't sound like a big deal.
Cool. Good news. Thanks for that.
Yeah, and Greg's done a great job with communication and coming down since he's taken over.
Nice. Cool. Yep. Good deal. All right, South San Diego Foster.
Are you on the phone, Brett? I don't think so. Foster, everything's going pretty well. Not a lot of steelhead moving in the trap. A total of 14 for the season, and I believe it's been almost 2 full weeks since they trapped the last steelhead. So not looking like we're going to get another push of steelhead.
They're out there today with 2 fish in the trap, and I guess they're steelhead. At Foster.
Yeah, Brett did mention that there was a couple fish. All the releases went well. Knock on wood, no signs of IHN or cold water disease. So things at South San Diego are going pretty well. Other than that, nothing to report.
Cool. Sounds like I've done some work to that braille recently, and knock on wood, hopefully got a good fix in place.
Yeah, we'll test it here soon enough.
See how it goes. All right, McKenzie.
Are you on, Kurt? Kurt's usually the one that's looming in the background. I think he had an appointment this morning.
Okay.
McKenzie, again, things are going pretty well. Fish health is good. They are on their prophylactic BKD aquamycin treatment, and this year, surprisingly, I guess, actually eating it. I know that's usually a pass, problem in the past where they don't eat that well. Kurt said they're eating it fine. There seem to be no feeding problems, so hopefully we don't see that kind of dip in growth like we typically do this time of year.
That's Kurt's favorite hypothesis for why we get this kind of size group, fish groups there.
Right.
That facility. Yeah, good. Any change, like formulation or anything you know about?
Nothing that I know about. Okay. Either something in the feed or water temps, but as far as we know, although the feed companies are pretty tight-lipped about that kind of stuff, any formulation stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't just share
They don't tend to share that.
They'd be happy to tell you that they're pleased that it's working.
That's right. Only other thing, McKenzie, there was some issues with the flow meter installed, the new flow meter. Thought it was a big problem, but turned out to just be some debris on the low impeller, so we got that cleaned out and have the flow meter working out for the new pipeline project. So that's all I got for McKenzie.
Any idea whether the ladder was open on time?
It was open, yep.
Okay.
It was open and...
water.
It's ready.
All right. What date was it opened on?
I think it was the 2nd.
May 2nd was when it was programmed to be open. But okay.
Unless that was, day of the week was that Tuesday. Yeah, it could have been the 1st or 2nd. It was right. That first week of May.
Okay. All right. Chad, how's the Cougar Trap doing?
Not a lot to report on Cougar.
Yeah.
The new pump that was ordered last year supposedly arrived in Portland last week and is supposed to show up down in the valley this week, and we have excuse me, the crane scheduled to install it either the 22nd or 23rd of next week. So hopefully we will have the facility in operation by the 23rd.
Cool.
That is all I have on Cougar.
When it's installed, is there any change to operation, any outage that would affect anything beyond what's already affected?
Well, the sump or the oil water separator, they still have that outage at Cougar, and it was scheduled to get over, I think, the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like it's kind of getting pushed back a little bit into June. so that could affect, I mean, most of the water's coming out of the RO, so that will definitely affect traction water to the facility. But yeah, other than that, I think that should be it for outages. Hopefully, okay. Fingers crossed.
And what did you say the date was for, you said the 27th? That
22nd or 23rd, it will be installed.
Yeah, but for the oil water separator issue.
It's scheduled to be complete by May 27th.
But it looks like it's
slipping.
Okay.
And I don't have a date yet as to when it'll be complete.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Chad.
Yep.
All right, Doug. Fall Creek.
Fall Creek, we got our first Chinook last week, a
Sweet.
Female. Unfortunately, an otter bit her head.
Oh, yeah.
And she was kind of going through rigor mortis by the time we hauled her. We hauled her upstream anyway.
Yeah.
We talked to the Springfield Wildlife biologist for the department as well as our own. And so the options are out there if this animal keeps hanging around. No more winter steelhead. The total this year is 2 Fall Creek. Groups of spawning suckers, fluvial cutthroat, resident looking cutthroat, rainbows. The big mark rainbows from the reservoir are ended up in the trap. Construction's going smoothly. We're learning to do the dance with the contractor there, so doing our trap and haul while they're trenching and laying, assembling the water supply, new water supply for the facility. So that's been an interesting dance, and that's kind of where we are.
Hmm.
Lots of water in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget inflows were almost 3,000 yesterday, Fall Creek. Yeah.
Crazy.
But low elevation rain. Precept, and then I don't know what's going to happen when the snow comes off up high.
Yeah.
All that.
So, with that otter, there's a fence around.
Swam right the ladder, right back down.
Mm.
Yeah, no sweat.
So there's nothing that you can really do as far as
nope.
a barrier to keep it out. Yeah.
But it can be easily removed.
That's what we said. We
right.
contacted both the department, the wildlife biologist at Springfield, as well as our own.
Yeah.
So all the options were laid out, euthanasia to trapping and get them out of there. Or if it's a family, get them out of there, whatever. But yeah, we're serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you pull the trigger, you got somebody coming to do that? I mean, it's easy and fast.
They just, if the animal's there, they disappear. So.
They come back.
Yeah. So
back,
anyway, we do. Everyone's aware. So what we were told by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, if you see them again, call us. That's where we are. We haven't seen them again. I don't know if we could proactively push that forward. Maybe we will. Yeah. What did you just like bait a trap and wait or something?
No, you bait an underwater trap, a grip trap underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Animal gets caught quite quickly. Usually within the first night of trapping, it's dead in 2 minutes. So it's fishing clean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we need approval other than just the wildlife bio saying do it? We were already authorized to take the animal out. Anyway.
As far as I know, no, you don't need to, as long as you've got authority from Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, we do.
So, yeah.
Okay. So what we'll do is, I guess, if you guys want, if the group wants us to, we'll get that going, right?
Yeah.
Get the trap going. Okay.
It doesn't have to be you.
There's
a trapper that can do it.
Or a trapper or whatever, yeah.
How do we handle that?
Obligating funds, whatever, we can go forward.
So if you wanted to use the trapper, then you just work through the wildlife biologist and they put you in touch with one of the U.S. USDA, I think, government, the government trappers, they can come out and evaluate and set a trap.
Okay.
Signs, that's a big thing, at least on our facilities, are signage, a couple issues with small dogs wandering into areas where trappers
sit. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bad situation. So, yeah, make sure it's inaccessible, well signed, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, they put you in touch with somebody from, I know the local guy here, but I don't know who, if they did the same.
Yeah, Chris had some leads on some folks to talk to.
Okay, perfect.
Have you had this happen before?
We get otters in there, but we've never seen one attack salmon. Okay. They come and grab trout all the time.
Yeah, they can be incredibly destructive. But
oh, yeah. If you've got a whole family, we've seen them like wipe out entire bull trout populations.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then move overland somewhere else or downriver somewhere else. You know.
Yeah.
It's a tough life as a wild animal.
They're doing what they do.
Oh, hi. Sorry to jump in here for a second. This is an otter, not a sea lion.
Yeah, this is an
way
otter.
Up basin. I'll let you know when we see our first pinniped in Fall Creek, though. It'll probably be in the news.
Okay.
All right.
Doing what otters do.
Yeah. I don't blame them too much. All right. How about Willamette and Dexter?
Willamette Dexter, just a couple quick updates. They had two vacancies, one at Dexter. We filled that position maybe 2 weeks ago. Doug Curtis, who was there in a job rotation for the past 6 months or so, was hired permanently into that position. The Fish and Wildlife Tech senior at the hatchery was filled by Josh Ketch, who was a Fish and Wildlife Tech at Willamette. Also had been in a rotation for a few months there, so change, but no big change. Mm-hmm. So now there's a vacancy for a Fish and Wildlife Tech position that we'll fill here probably by July.
Yeah, I actually talked to Doug Curtis, right?
Right.
Yeah, I actually talked to him the other week because he was interested in purchasing some goats.
Right.
And bringing them to Dexter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
And I told him, I was like, well, I mean, we have like these regulations that say no livestock, you know, blah, 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 except with written permission by the commander. And so he's like, how does that process work? He's like, I don't know, but we can find out.
Yeah.
So he's going to try.
Okay.
And
and there's also some internal issues.
I was here at Minto this morning picking up some feed, and I told him if he figured out how to get a goat there, I'd like one here.
The answer's no, Greg. The short answer's no. Yeah, I mean, it does conflict.
Can I leave the gate open and let a couple of these deer in, or...?
There you go, yeah. Good with that.
So it conflicts with the internal
policy.
ODFW policy? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if my stance, and I think maybe where we could get some leverage, although Doug seemed less interested, would be using them like as a tool, like you would hire a landscape crew, you'd hire the goat person to bring in the goats for a week or two. But that has some challenges too. He was much less interested in going that route.
Hmm.
I don't know if there's goat for hire folks, but I'm sure you could find folks that want. I know there's a Portland area. I've seen goats fenced up underneath bridge overpasses and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, you would have used them a few years ago on the canal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and I think we've actually used them on some of our projects in Columbia.
So I think that would be, from my standpoint, worth pursuing, but goats is pets. I mean, really, that's where it gets into an issue, is it's a pet and or livestock, and both of those categories, we would not permit goats at any of our facilities. So sorry, Greg. Deer, I think we're good with deer, though. Yeah, just leave
I'd like to maybe get a couple of Rocky Mountain sheep. Or?
Perfect, yeah, no, those are indigenous, we're good, yep.
All right.
On the wall, right? You're talking about on the wall? I think the marking started this week at Willamette, so started on time, on schedule. So far, so good, but it's still early. So,
so typically, would that marking work be funded by a task order that arrives in July of the summer?
Hmm.
Or is it
That's a good question.
Or is it funded by last year's task order in 2016? Because that one, technically would extend all the way through June and cover.
Right, so I think the answer is yes to both.
Okay.
So I think the, my understanding, the fish marketing budget would be built to do all of the work. It just so happens that the work is done across two fiscal years or mm-hmm. taxable years. So the money that's, the balance of that account would pay for marketing done prior to June 30th. But then the new task order contract would have to cover the work after June 30th, after July 1st.
Okay.
That would be my understanding.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay. For this upcoming contract, I think that performance period will be the same end of June to, or 1st of July to the end of June.
Okay.
And so whatever work is done inside that window
right.
will be funded by the money associated with that.
Okay, yeah, so I think that's so, all. Because, yeah, so for, you know, if we finish marking, if we marked after July 1st, you know, even internally, we wouldn't be able to back bill.
Sure.
Because that task order ends June 30th without
yeah.
an extend, without a, whatever, a no-cost extension, which I don't think we've done many of those, at least not for the O&M stuff.
Yeah.
I think we did the one for McKenzie Pipeline or something
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it's going to match up with
yep.
what we got coming.
Yeah,
right.
I think so.
Cool.
And then Dexter Trap opens next Monday. I don't know if I mentioned that. Fish will just come flooding in, I'm sure. By the singles, maybe.
Cool.
Liebberg, no real update. Just hauling lots of trout down to. Right now, four employees at Liebberg and soon to be three, so short-staffed and trucks buzzing around like crazy hauling trout all over the valley.
I spoke to Aaron just to confirm that, as I understand it, Mike Odinson going through the season will have access to the facility and there won't be any disruption of the service for the video monitoring at Liebberg.
Yeah, I think that's consistent with my understanding, although I'm not sure how the video monitoring at Leeward Dam ties into the hatchery, or if it does.
The fiber optic.
Okay.
To Hobbitson's office.
Okay.
So that's where they view the video.
Okay.
And then I need to come up with an alternative if he has no longer gets access to that space. So, and I don't know what the option is, rewire it. But that's fine, as long as
so
your understanding is he has access.
I guess that's probably a question for Andy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so task order extension for Liebberg. We're working on it right now, and it'll extend the current task order for one calendar year. So this will be all the way through the end of June 2018. And so there's a little bit of funding associated with it for the production of trout and the dispersal of those being stocked, but everything else that Liebberg enjoyed underneath the cooperative agreement stays in place. So like housing, use of the facility, visitor centers, offices. So anything that Mike's doing, I think, would still fall under that. So yeah, I don't see any reason why.
Once that's signed, we're good for the year, but probably should have a conversation moving forward. Where do we go with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, just kind of, briefly here, the idea would be within that 1 year extension period, we work on a transfer of the facility to the state if ODFW wants it.
Since you brought that up, what's your thought on, I guess, that process and who, you know, is that something you would initiate or I would initiate or folks well above our pay grades or what's your thought there?
We've talked about it a little bit. And it's kind of like tabled for now while we deal with all this other contract stuff, but
I think that's kind of where we
viewed
it as well.
But the real estate office knows about it. They've talked about it. They kind of looked at, okay, this is what we need. We need at least a year, hence the extension. It costs a little bit of money to do that kind of stuff. We have to do these same environmental condition of property assessments that we're doing at all the hatcheries.
Right.
We'd have to do it for Liebberg before we transfer a facility. We have to know what condition it's in. So doing all that stuff this year has been good because all the folks that would need to engage for the property transfer for Liebberg have been doing all the same work at other hatcheries, so they're very familiar with it now and they kind of know what goes into it.
Okay.
So It would require a little bit of money. I mean, I don't know if it'd be a ton, but something that maybe we could fund, or if we're going to transfer the facility no cost to the state, maybe the state wants to fund some of that stuff too. And then it kind of depends on what transfer route we go. There's a disposal process through GSA, and when we do that, I think other federal government agencies get preference first.
Okay.
So like U.S. Fish and Wildlife could say, oh, well, we really want it, and so we can't guarantee that ODFW would get it. But the likelihood of U.S. Fish or NIMFs or anybody else wanting it, I think it's pretty low.
Right.
So then I think it, and this is what we were unsure on, we were trying to do some research, but tribes may also have a right of first refusal for that stuff. So we need to sort that one out. But I think it's fairly unlikely that anyone else would try to jump on LIBOR. But going through the GSA, it's not a guarantee that we could transfer to the state. It sounds like there may be other avenues where we could guarantee transfer, but it's more expensive or it takes longer or more convoluted, something like that. So
okay.
I'll keep you posted on how we move, but as soon as we get the contracts in place, that's what we're going to start working on, because it takes a while.
Okay.
So keep you updated. But yeah, I mean, if ODFW is still interested in the facility, then our, you know, hope would be you guys get the whole thing. There you go.
Cool. Thanks for the update.
Yeah. All right. And that brings us down to kind of what we were talking about, fish counts at Leeburg. And also Bennett.
Bennett's, both Bennett's are online, operating smoothly, and had no significant problems so far this year. Counts are really low. Got a total of 142 winter run and 5 summer run as of end of last week. One Chinook salmon had clipped. So we're waiting. Leeburg has just updated all of the data through April, and I believe through last week, I'm not 100% certain on that. Through April, 2 winter steelhead were counted, and last week, a rumor, I guess, an email that from Hoganson, 1 non-mark Chinook salmon on the Red Bank. That's it. So really, really slow.
Are any of the 2017 counts online, Cam?
All of the Bennett counts are online.
Yeah, sorry, I was asking about
all of the Leeburg data just got updated last week, so
okay.
we'll populate the fish counts for Leeburg
okay.
through April. Mike said he's working on it today.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it looks like nothing after June of 16.
All right, thanks, Cam. So the only other thing that I had on here for today was the adult return disposition spreadsheet. We got a couple questions, and I thought it might just be easier and better to address them with the group here instead of me trying to do it on my own. Lance asked a question. He was wondering why there was a skewed sex ratio for broodstock in the North San Diem and the South San Diem. He said it seems like 200 and 269 females is low. He knows from the HGMP, and that's good. But the fresh look now at it, and he's kind of scratching his head. Lance, do you want to speak any more to that, or did I capture your thought there?
Yeah, and it kind of came up, Andy, when you sent out the fish disposition table, and I was looking at it. And just trying to figure out what was going on there on those skewed ratios, or if that was the intent, what I can't really remember.
Lance, I need to look at it, because there shouldn't, I don't recall any reason why we would have a skewed ratio for brood, because it's one-on-one spawning. I just need to pick up the spreadsheet and look back at it again. Are you sure you're not looking at something like outplanting or ratios?
Hey, Ryan, are you there?
I am.
I think we kind of figured that out, because Elise had put in that we collect like 60% males, 40% females, and then added some in for BKD culling, but basically we pull them in, we hold them pretty much 50-50. To spawn, and I do hold all the outplants also till, you know, late for outplanting in the Brighton bush and stuff. So Khalees had some formula that she was trying to go by all the biological returns stuff instead of just what we hold.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Like Greg mentioned, it does account for the skewed return ratio of Chinook back to the facilities, but it doesn't necessarily account for what we hold. It is, as Lance mentioned, it is what's in the HGMB. The female targets, the 200 and 269, from talking to Greg and Brett yesterday, I mean, that's the number of, you know, we need viable embryos from that number of fish. So in my opinion, that would be after culling. We would need 200 and 269 respectively, viable pairs after PSM and culling. So yeah, maybe we need to revisit that, but it is the language, the numbers that are in the HGMP.
I don't think we have to revisit it. I think the numbers are right, we just need to explain why that is a little seem anomalous. So.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I know the intent is 50-50, and we wanted, you know, all that work that we did on the HGMP is making sure that our broodstock numbers weren't really super high at the expense of outplanting. But maybe this is not the right year to be bringing this up with low returns. But in any case, if there's, you know, more females available for broodstock and we have sufficient numbers of females outplanted above the dams, then in my mind, there's no downside of having a larger broodstock size, you know, for genetics and diversity and all of that. But just a thought there. So yeah, that cleared it up. You know, the 50-50 is what we want to do.
And maybe instead of target, we could describe it as a minimum.
Yeah, or maybe, I don't know, in the notes or in a new column or something, then you would list, you actually, we're going to spawn this many females with this many males. Kind of the spawning targets. Because the target number of fish to collect, I mean, that's right, the 541 for the North Santiam. That's right. How many fish you actually need to collect at Minto.
Right.
But you're not going to spawn every single one of those fish because some of them are going to die and your sex ratio is skewed. So.
And in the HGMP, that is the description given, accounts for in hatchery PSM and females representing 40% of the adult return.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's that math is done, and if you only looked at the disposition table without the context, then yeah,
you could see how folks would be confused. So yeah, I don't know. I mean,
well, maybe just to clarify that, just add in the notes of the disposition table that the desire or the target is 50-50, you know, sex ratio for the brood stock.
Done.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Lance. And then the only other comment on here was a pretty minor one from Tom. He's saying, row 12, North Santiam, winter steelhead, pretty sure we decided that returning pit tagged fish should be recycled downstream, not above Minto.
Okay. That's that one fish. Okay, if it shows up. Downstream.
Yeah. Cam, will you let us know if it gets to Bennett?
Okay, I can try.
Okay. I mean, we haven't seen it at Bennett yet. I guess that would be my question.
Bennett does have.
Bennett has pit tag detection capabilities. It's online. So, yeah, we'll see it at Bennett. I'll have Paul add the Bennett. Paul Olmsted manages that. I'll have him add the Bennett if he hasn't already. Bennett detections.
All right. Anything else regarding the disposition table? Cool. All right.
Hope we get close to those numbers.
Yeah. No kidding. Hopefully. Well, that's all I had on the agenda, unless anybody else has anything they'd like to discuss.
That's all I got.
All right.
You've always got something else, Cam.
No, it's fun stuff. Last week.
All right.
I do get to do a master's thesis defense with a heat sump.
Oh, okay.
My employees went on to graduate school and asked me to be on our committee. So I am.
Cool.
That's where I'm off.
Nice, Cam. All right. See you, Cam. Thanks. All right, folks. Well, we're going to hang up the line here. Thanks for joining today.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye, guys.
See you. Bye.